Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler, and I'm flying solo with my guest today. Judy is off taking care of hubby. If you're part of the community, you know what's happened. If not, you can plug into the Mighty Parenting community and find out. If you're in our Patreon group, we're doing more regular updates in there, but you can pop over to mightyparenting.com/support. And there's a lot of info on that page, and in there, you'll be able to find out how to keep updated on what happened to the Davis family and why Judy's not here right now. And by the time this airs, things will have changed a little bit, so you got to keep checking in there, not so much on the show, because we record ahead of time. And today, I am very excited about the recording we're doing. We are talking about our kids' well-being and happiness, which is what Mighty Parenting is about, raising happy, successful, emotionally healthy teens, right? And to do that, I mean, there's so many topics to cover, so many problems to troubleshoot, so many questions that we get from parents. But really, as parents, what we do so that our kids can be happy. I remember when Tom and I got into our first year of homeschooling, our girls were 6 and 8, and there were so many possibilities that it was overwhelming. And then there was all this guilt about not giving them enough or not doing enough with them, or the idea that they might miss out on some crucial experience because somebody offered, you know, Chinese and somebody else offered French and someone offered auto shop and we didn't do it all. So to avoid this constant guilt and overwhelm, Tom and I sat down and we made a list of what we wanted for our kids when they became adults. And I don't remember now what every item on the list was, but it wasn't very long. It was like 5 or 6 things. And happy was right near the top of that list. If not number one, it's in the top two. The other thing I remember is that the items on the list went to the very foundation of a good life. We weren't detailing where they would live or how they would spend each day. We made a list of things we wanted for them, like happiness, character, some basic skill sets. And that's the same type of thing that I see in the work that today's guest does. He is Dr. Suvrat Bhargava, and he is sharing with us a way to cut through the noise and get to the foundations of peace and happiness. Dr. Bhargava is a renowned and respected educator, a speaker, the author of the book, A Moment of Insight, and a board-certified psychiatrist specializing in child and adolescent psychiatry. He speaks on a broad range of topics, but all pertaining to personal growth, effective parenting, relationship satisfaction, and mental health conditions. And he bases all of his work on a foundation of empathy, education, and empowerment. So Dr. B, welcome to the Mighty Parenting community. Thanks for being here with us.
Oh, Sandy, thank you so much for having me. And I am so excited to be sharing some insights with your listeners today. I really do appreciate it. And I can tell just from the wonderful conversation you sparked in the intro that this could go on and on. You and I have a lot to talk about today.
We do. And so yeah. I can tell you right now, we're probably going to be tapping you to see if we can get more of your time in the future. But
I would love that. I can already tell I would love that.
I'm not allowed to do a 2-hour podcast. Judy won't let me. So.
That would be a bit much, wouldn't it?
Well, yes, and there is. There are so many things I want to talk about, and I was reading your book, and I just kept adding to the list and adding to the list. I think what was interesting to me is that in your work, you were saying that essentially we all struggle with the same types of dilemmas and end up asking the same questions. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I found that very interesting because you've been a psychiatrist for how many years?
20 years.
That's a long time. You've seen a lot of patients as well as, you know, just talking to people in your personal life, your own family, your own kids. And to say that, you know, we're asking these same questions, it begs the question, what are those questions? Like, what is it that we all have in common that we kind of need to know the answer to?
Yeah, well, let me say this. When I went into psychiatry, I was so grateful to finally be in a position of where I felt like I could maybe make a difference and help other people. If I'm being totally honest, it didn't really occur to me when I went into the field how much I was about to learn. I knew I was about to teach. I did not realize how much I was about to learn. And one of my greatest lessons learned is when I get to have this privilege of sitting down with people, sometimes in their most vulnerable and difficult points in their lives, you know, when you're at that point in your life, I mean, sometimes literally on your knees, you really cut through all the other stuff and you get to the real stuff that matters. So what I found was that even in terms of people coming from different backgrounds and having their own perspective about things, at the end of the day, the things that we were struggling with, the questions we were asking were really all the same. We were all asking questions like, who am I? Why do I go through what I go through? Why does this happen? How can I let go? How do I forgive? All those questions were the same. And also, it was very interesting, Sandy, because so much of the answers that we came up with were also the same. You know, if you ask enough questions, you're bound to find some answers at some point. And it just felt like we were all coming up with the same answers as well. So this book really is my attempt to bring out collected wisdom, if you will. And it's not my wisdom, it's wisdom that comes from having really good, frank, honest, vulnerable discussions and finding out the things that make us all more alike than different. So I would say that there's a lot of about our insecurities and the questions that come forth that really are the same.
Well, and that idea that it's the insecurities, mm-hmm. that we all have this vulnerable place. And I'm thinking about this because we're parents of, primarily we're talking about parents of teenagers and 20 somethings. And mm-hmm. those are very vulnerable times in our lives where our insecurities would grow and feel magnified.
Mm-hmm. And yes, so, for sure.
Yeah, this conversation about that and where they come from and how we deal with that makes a lot of sense to me to understand as a parent. Oh, this is just a human experience. This isn't just mm-hmm. something my teenager goes through. Mm-hmm. This is something we all go through.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the points that you make that is so important, even to say to our children, to the young adults and the teens that we're raising, is that what they're experiencing is more typical. I think almost every single one of us can relate to at some point in our lives feeling like the thoughts that we had in our heads were unique in some way. And not only were they unique, if we're being honest, we often judged ourselves to the point that these thoughts we're having are just plain absurd or crazy or irrational. I mean, we use those words, or stupid. And so one of the aha moments for me, one of the moments of insight that I had when I first began practicing, is that, again, people who came in ready to feel perhaps judged, they were all, again, feeling like they were the only ones who'd sat in my office that day and said the things that they were saying. I, on the other hand, got to have the experience of sitting there all day long and finding out that we were all still saying the same things. So I think you bring up a really good point. One of the things that we need to tell our young people is they're not alone in anything that they might be thinking. More importantly, they're not alone in anything that they're feeling. I think mm-hmm. sometimes people get really stuck in their own experiences of life. And the bottom line of that even is there's very few things that I've experienced that other people haven't somewhere or somehow experienced as well. But even if we put our experiences in a box and say that they're completely unique, the feelings that you and I both experience at the end of the day are the same. And so there's nothing that you have felt that I have not felt. Regardless of what brought those feelings out, there's nothing you have felt that I haven't felt. And if I have felt what you have felt, then how dare I judge you? And yet the truth is most young people, most teenagers, most young adults are constantly feeling the burden of being judged. They're judging themselves. They feel like other people are judging them. We really have an environment right now where it's hard for them to, in their minds, feel like they're not being judged at all times. So if you've ever felt what I have felt, then I can't judge you and vice versa. So I think it's a great statement to make at the very beginning of your communication with your young adult is to say, I promise you what you're feeling, I have felt as well.
in that judgment piece, I know that's mm-hmm. huge. Judy and I have heard that when we would talk to teens, we'd talk to young adults, and in particular, if we're talking to kids who've had substance abuse issues or have attempted suicide, and it's, you know, if you felt this badly, why didn't you reach out for help? And mm-hmm. there were varying answers, but oftentimes we would get an answer that was, I felt like I'd be judged. If I told mm-hmm. this person or that person, they would judge me. They would judge the way I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So many young people that I see, they describe exactly what you just said. And oftentimes the people that they connect with, the friends that they hang around with the most, are the ones that they also think of or have expressed to them in some way being flawed. And I'm putting that in quotes because, you know, we have a perspective that's different than that age. But at that point in their lives, they think that if they've ever thought a certain way or felt a certain way or done certain things or had certain things done to them, that they're in some ways flawed or defective. And so I think it's really, again, important to be able to say that there is nothing you have felt that I haven't felt. There probably isn't anything that you've experienced that hasn't also been experienced by someone. So tell me a little bit about what that's like. But more importantly, I really do want to know how you're feeling. I find that, you know, when we create an atmosphere that is non-judgmental and is safe, that most teenagers actually want to talk. You know, sometimes when I tell people that I work with teens and young adults, the truth is a lot of times people will look at me and say, gosh, that must be hard. I actually honestly don't think so. I think teenagers want to be heard. It's up to us to create an environment where it's safe for them to do so, and it's okay to be vulnerable. And I've heard you talk a lot on the show about modeling behaviors. We have to be able to demonstrate that it's okay to be vulnerable by being vulnerable. You know, so one of the things that I talk about in the book and in the very beginning of A Moment of Insight is being 20 years old and being at the worst point in my own life, being completely empty and not understanding who am I. And so to be able to say that to a young adult already feels like they are understood even in a small way.
It doesn't have to be an identical experience. It's mm-hmm. just, I have also been through a difficult time. I have mm-hmm. also felt judged or, as you said, empty or mm-hmm. wondered about mm-hmm. these questions like, you know, some of the ones you said, who am I? Why am I here? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, I mean,
what now? Why me? And those are the things, as you said them before, you said, you know, those are the questions that come up at the difficult points in our lives. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, the times we're on our knees, and we can all relate to that at some point of just be going, God, why me? You
know, right, that's
what
right.
What did
that's
I right. do? The who am I question, though, is you walked through your book and you talked about, you shared the way your grandfather mm-hmm. talked to you about who you are. Can you share yeah. a little bit of that? Because I found myself thinking about that, even just for myself, with the who am I?
Yes.
And you'll get to it. I know I'm jumping the gun just a little, but being able to strip away, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm a business owner, being able to strip that away actually mm-hmm. felt so good.
Mm-hmm. No, I think this is the core of what really holds a lot of people back. And that's for young people as well as the adults who are at the point in their lives where you and I are both at, Sandy. I think if you can't answer who am I, that has nothing to do with what you're doing in this moment or what's going on in your life, then you're kind of riding a roller coaster. Right? I mean, mm-hmm. even going back to your intro when you were talking about at the top of most parents' list is, I just want my child to be happy. I'll be honest, I used to say exactly that. That was the top of our list as well for my wife and myself, for our two children, and they're also in their 20s. And that used to be the top of the list, was that we just want them to be happy. And I changed that at some point. And I changed it to, rather than I want them to be happy, I really want them to live with purpose. And purpose goes with understanding who you are and what your gifts are. So now to go back to my grandfather, that the story that you're referring to, my grandfather, when I was younger, lived with us, and my grandparents both did. And my grandfather was a real scholarly gentleman. He was someone who I have to imagine always was questioning things in his own head. And so as a result, sometimes he would question us as well. And if I'm being honest, at the time, it would sometimes be a little infuriating that I would just have to deal with my grandfather asking me questions that were really deep ones. But boy, did they serve me later in life. So one of the questions that he would ask me quite often is, who are you? And as a child, in my head, I was like, what is this man talking about? He, you know, something's wrong if he has to keep asking me, who am I? But he would ask me, who are you? And if I chose to answer that by giving him my name, if I said, I am Suvrat, then his immediate answer would be something like, oh, okay, so if you changed your name, who would you be? And so I realized that's not going to work. So then I would try answering it another way. And I would oftentimes try to appeal to his ego and say, I'm your grandson. And he would say, okay, so if I weren't here, who would you be? And what I didn't realize he was doing is he was challenging me to realize that who I am at my core has nothing to do with the roles that I play in my life. Because if I invest myself to understand my identity with those roles are going to change. And instead, he was trying to get me to think deeper. So it wasn't until years later when I was, again, at this low point in my life, around the age of 20 in college. And I realized on this particular day that I describe in the book, the bottom line of that was I realized that I had been trying so hard to be what I felt everyone wanted me to be. I was quite the pleaser. And I was trying to be what everyone wanted me to be. But it turns out I wasn't even sure anymore what it was that people wanted from me. And that really threw me off because I had no idea of who I now was. So, and I believe if you have not done what it is I'm about to suggest, I can tell you it changed my life. It changed the lives of many young people that I see in my practice. The task that presented itself in my head was I gave myself the idea that I was going to identify my individual five gifts. And being a people pleaser, that also means I would follow my own rules. So I gave myself some rules. And the rules were that I needed to come up with and write down my five gifts. And by five gifts, I understood what it was that I was asking myself to do. I was asking myself to write down qualities and traits of mine that never change, that I can't deny, that don't depend on who's around me, what I'm doing, but I needed to write down these five gifts. Now, I'll tell you, Sandy, I thought I was being generous. I thought 10 days, five gifts, plenty of time. It is the hardest thing I have ever done in my life. If you haven't done it, I would absolutely encourage you to do it. And it was on the 10th day that I actually wrote down the fifth gift. And then I looked at this list of what I called my gifts, and I realized that I had not been utilizing these five gifts. I had spent so much time up till that point in my life thinking about all the things I had done to mess up my life or not be good enough or trying to be what other people wanted me to be. This changed my perspective. It really gave me a chance to start getting to know myself in a way that would be more solid, more constant, if you will. So my grandfather's discussion of who are you eventually on that lowest day of my life came back to serve me well because it made me say, really, who are you? How do you want to define this? And that's where the five gifts came into play.
And well, it's just, I love the way this all flows together. So going back just a little, mm-hmm. That, you know, you used to say we want our kids to be happy. Yes. Now we say, I want them to live with purpose. Yes. And that goes back to that idea of getting to the very foundational pieces, because happiness comes from, as I'm understanding, you know, happiness mm-hmm. comes from having your purpose, and part of your purpose comes from understanding your gifts. So it's kind of this tiered, or maybe peeling the layers of the onion to get to, okay, I want my kids to be happy. How can I help them be happy? And part of it is this understanding of what their gifts and talents are, which is really interesting to me because that actually ties into a couple of the other interviews we've done. I think they've both been this year. They may have been the end of last year. Mm-hmm. But we're other experts who are in, they're doing something that wouldn't look like it's the same as yours, but they're giving us the same advice in different words. Mm-hmm. Help your child find their gifts and support that. Mm-hmm. You know, find what they're really good at and love and just feed that.
Exactly. Exactly. And I've heard a couple of those podcasts, and in my head I thought, you know, I love it when we all come up with the same realizations as well, because truth ought to be universal, no matter how you got to it. So I've heard those interviews that you've done. I remember one about comic books, and I was a big comic book geek growing up. So I particularly listened to that conversation you were having. But and we were all saying the same thing, which again is, if we as parents can help our children identify what their gifts are, then you can really balance out how you view yourself. That has nothing to do with the moment in your life that right now is very difficult. Because as a 20-year-old or as a teenager, let's face it, there are some really difficult things that they have to go through. But if you can get through those things, knowing that your sense of self didn't change, your circumstance changed, but not your sense of self. So for example, with the five gifts, the gift, I always only ever share one of my gifts, because it's all about knowing what your gifts are, but you don't have to compare your gifts to anyone else's. And if you list out your gifts and someone lists out their gifts, sometimes you tend to do that. But the one gift that I always share is the first gift that I knew that popped into my head immediately, and that was empathy. I knew I had empathy. I knew I could understand how other people would feel. So the example that I would give you is, on a really bad day, I would take out my list. And by the way, I wrote that list down on a piece of paper, and I carried it in my pocket, Sandy, every day. I carried it in my pocket every day until I no longer had to look at it. And I still have the list, because I do want to remember there was a time in my life where I could not answer, who am I? But on a really difficult day, I would look at that list and I would say, okay, fine. You think you have empathy, go use it. And I would charge myself on that day with going out and using the gift of empathy. So let's say I was at the grocery store, and you know how when you're at the grocery store, they ring you up and they say, did you find everything okay? How's your day been? And it's pretty routine, right? Mm-hmm. You almost wonder if they expect an answer. And so now remember, I'm looking to use empathy. So I would end up saying, well, yeah, my day's been good. You look like you've been busy. And then the other person might say, yeah, it's been a really crazy day. And then I might say, well, I hope you get off of work soon. The other person might say, well, yeah, I've just got another hour to go. And I might say, well, look, the good thing about being busy is that's going to fly by, and I hope you get to go home and do nothing. And then I would leave that conversation and, at least in my head, pat myself on the back and say, okay, you know what? You do have empathy. So what that did for me was it made me go through my day, and rather than only focusing on what I wasn't doing well or what was happening to me, I was purposefully going through my day using my gift. And to me, I've had a purposeful day today as long as I used any one of my five gifts. And before I go to bed at night, even tonight, I will ask myself, did you use a gift? And if I did, then I lived purposefully. And the more I realize that I live purposefully every single day, happiness just kind of results.
And you also talked about, we started talking at the beginning, we started talking a little about insecurities. Mm-hmm. And you talk in the book about how anxiety goes along with insecurity.
Yes.
And you actually mentioned this idea of, I might be blending things together in my head, so it might not be technically correct. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but sure. I thought I remembered that in the book you talked about, you know, if you start to feel those insecurities or that anxiety just begin bubbling up, that shifting your focus to going, okay, how can I use my gift, will help you move out of that darker, more difficult place into a happier, more positive place.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You got that right. You know, anxiety is one of the conditions that I treat the most in my practice. And, you know, when we go back to saying there's very little that you have felt that I haven't felt, think about this. There's always a time in someone's life, and some of us felt it more than others. You have felt anxious at times. I have felt anxious at times. And the core of being anxious is doubting. You doubt yourself. You doubt your environment. You doubt what you're about to do. You're second guessing. You're what ifing. You're doubting. The idea that I am always gifted, I always have these five traits, that's a constant. There's no doubt about that. So what I do today is going to be up and down. Who I am today is exactly the same person as I was yesterday. I mean, how great would it be if you have such a strong sense of yourself that when you wake up in the morning tomorrow, you know that there is nothing you're going to do today, nothing at all, that's going to jeopardize who you are. And you don't have to work extra hard today to become more worthy. You already are.
Oh, can you say that again?
Yes, absolutely. If you can wake up each morning knowing that there is nothing you're going to do today that is going to jeopardize your worth, because who you are is constant, and you don't have to work extra hard today to become more worthy. If you know that you are constant, look, you can deal with life. Life is going to have ups and downs. And what kids do all the time, and when I say kids, I mean young kids, teenagers, as well as adults sometimes, we are constantly mixing what we do with who we are. And I hate to say it, but as parents, we sort of lead them down that path, right? If they bring home a really great report card, we tend to say something like, gosh, I am so proud of you. Look at what you've done. Instead, what I'm suggesting is, wherever it's possible, try to point out the gift that they used. So they bring home that report card, and you might say, God, that looks great. But you also might say, look at that. There you go, being curious again.
Oh, I like that.
Well, now you just identified a gift. And the more you keep pointing out curiosity, the more the child gets to find out that curiosity worked for him or her, whether it was about the grades or whether it was about that day that she spent reading or it was about the time where he figured something out on his own. Curiosity is the gift. Student is the role that you play. So I do think that as parents, we can really internalize for these children the fact that who they are is constant by pointing out the gifts that you notice about them. Now, ultimately, they need to know what their own gifts are. But point out the gifts. I think if we can do that, we're kind of separating out who you are from what you do.
Well, I like that too as a parenting strategy for a number of reasons. But one being, it doesn't feel appropriate to me to sit down and have a conversation with my kid and go, well, gee, what do you think your gifts are? Like you said, it's not really about sharing that thought with someone else or comparing them. And you certainly don't want to get somebody else's approval on what you think your gifts are. And this is a way of supporting our kids, encouraging them, and doing it from that very foundational core place of who they are, but not putting our thoughts on them.
That's right. That's
not
right.
Saying, this is what I think your gifts are.
That's right. You're merely making the observation, right? And as people in the lives of these young ones, we have a great opportunity to make our observations known. And oftentimes, observation is enough. You don't even have to draw the conclusion for them. You're simply making the observation. Look at that. You're working hard again. Look at that, how curious you are. Oh gosh, there you go again, being so compassionate. You're identifying and just kind of observing traits about that child that just keep coming up. You just can't deny it. You can't deny it. And at some point, if they keep hearing the same words each and every time, they can't help but wonder, maybe I am compassionate. Oh, I guess I am empathetic. Oh, wow, I guess I am creative. And then they start exploring that further. And so to me, you know, one of the things that causes the greatest difficulty for the people that I see in my practice, but the fact is it's the most difficult hurdle we all have to overcome, is some idea of shame. A lot of times we walk around having shame about something in our lives, some way that we have felt or what was done to us or what we have done. We carry around a lot of shame. Well, this discussion about who you are and what you do will directly tackle shame, because there is a difference between shame and guilt. You were describing a little bit ago about how we as parents often feel guilty that, gosh, if I had known it this way, I would have raised him differently, or I would have done that differently. And that's guilt. Guilt is a tool to learn. Anytime you're feeling guilty, we should stop and ask ourselves, what should I have, could I have, or should I be doing differently? And look, if there's an answer, let's learn it. Let me really learn what it is I needed to learn. Let me make amends if I need to. And then let me say thank you to guilt and let it go. What we often confuse guilt with is shame. So where guilt is regret for something that I did, shame is remorse for who I am. And we mix the two. I failed a test, therefore I am a bad person. Or I was mean to my little brother today, therefore I'm mean or I'm bad. Those are two totally different things. So when you have an idea of who you are, then what you do, you can deal with. And you can deal with guilt.
That's another small parenting skill there, is just watching our wording about things. Mm-hmm. This is just one popped in my head when my girls were little. One of them, well, she's just a quiet person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we would meet people and everybody wants them to come out and be gregarious and everything else. And she has sensory issues and some other things. So she would tend to kind of hang back, and people would always say, "Oh, you're so shy." Mm-hmm. And my husband and I just started saying, "No, she's not shy. She might feel shy right this minute, but she's not a shy person."
Mm-hmm. And I think that
in twisting that, now we can watch ourselves and be careful in our wording, because our kids are going to do things that we need to talk to them about that was an inappropriate action or mm-hmm. a choice that it doesn't match up with our family's values or whatever. But mm-hmm. we as parents, then it sounds like we need to watch our wording to make sure that it's about the action. And it
right.
can even tie back into not shaming, but being able to go, "I was really surprised you said that." Mm-hmm. "You're such an empathic person mm-hmm. that's not like you."
Yeah. I think that's a wonderful way of looking at it. And, you know, going back to the example also of your daughter being shy at that in that moment, I think the difference between what the other person said and then kind of what you said, no, she's not shy, she's feeling shy in the moment. You know, we tend to hear how other people define who we are, and then we make it our role or our story to be that person. So, oh, she's our funny one, he's our smart one, he's our quiet one, he's our sensitive one. And then we take that and we really think we have to confine ourselves to being in that role. What I'm suggesting about who am I and defining it with these constant ideas of who you are, it can come into play with all kinds of different roles. So you're not confined to a role. You are not just the smart one. You are not just the sensitive one. You are not just the shy one. You are who you know yourself to be. And these are just roles that change. In a moment, you might feel shy. In a moment, you might not feel shy. At this point in your life, you might feel shy. At another point in your life, you may not be shy. But you'll always be curious.
So with the example I gave about the empathy, and you know,
yes.
I was surprised you said that. Was I placing them in the role of being the kid with empathy?
I think it's, you know, when you talk about a gift, any gift can become a burden if we don't understand how to really use that gift. So for example, with a gift of empathy, for those of us who have the gift of empathy, with the gift of empathy, you also have to understand boundary. Because if I understand how you feel, if my empathy helps me understand how you feel, it's natural for me to then want to take on the responsibility to make sure that you are happy. And that's a tough burden, right? If mm-hmm. I'm walking around my day trying to make sure that everyone that isn't happy becomes happy, and I think it's my job, then empathy becomes a burden. So instead, empathy, if that's the gift that you're talking about, you also want to talk about how empathy must come with some sense of boundary. I can feel what you're feeling and say to you, "Sandy, I'm really sorry that you're feeling sad today or really frustrated today." And then I can stop. Sometimes simply saying, "I feel what you're feeling," is enough to help the other person feel understood. You don't want to take it on, right? You don't want to make it your role to play that you're always taking care of other people's feelings.
Right. It's not, our gift isn't our job or our responsibility to make good in everybody else's life.
That's
right. It's just something for us to utilize and share and be as we go through life.
That's right. So another concrete example I'll give you is at the end of my day, every single day in my practice, when everyone is gone and I've said goodbye, I go back to my room and I sit at my desk and I pull out my list of patients for the day. And I go through every name, and every name gets another 2 minutes of my headspace, if you will. And I sit there and I think to myself, is there anything more I would have done today for Sandy? Okay, no. All right, move on. Is there anything else I would have done today for Judy? And by the way, if the answer is yes, I pick up the phone and I call and I say, hey, listen, Judy, I was thinking maybe blah, 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 whatever that is. But otherwise, I go down the list. I get to the last name on the list. I turn the page over. I say what I'm going to call a prayer of gratitude, allowing me to be a part of their lives. Thank you for allowing for that to happen. Thank you for the vulnerability that they've shown, the courage they've shown. Allow them to be perseverant. Allow them to have the insights. And then I leave. Now, I don't stop loving. I love my patients. I don't stop loving. But I do realize that now the boundary is I did what I could do. It's not about the outcome. It's about offering up my gift. And my gift was empathy. So there are ways to keep a gift as a gift without it becoming a burden.
Well, and a couple of things that you said in there take me to, probably going to have to be our last point of discussion. Mm-hmm. You talked about, insight, and it's, you just said, and I lost the word, it's not about the outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And as parents, one of the challenges, you've probably faced it with your own kids because it's mm-hmm. different when you're not at work, right? At work, right. You have sort of a different mental state. You're very cognizant of the boundaries you must have with a patient. All that goes to pieces when you're at home with your kids, I imagine, at least at certain times.
We're all human.
Right. And, yes. and you just can't be in that space 24/7, 365. So you talked about the insight. You talked about, it's not about the outcome. And that all reminded me of one of the stories you had in the book about a patient where you had seen her, she had actually been abused by her husband and mm-hmm. you'd been seeing her for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And it was actually a general human condition comment, not a professional comment from you mm-hmm. that shifted things for her.
Yes.
And we can learn from that, I think, as parents, because when we see something happening with our kids, we see our kids struggling. We see them going down a path that we don't think is best for them. We want them to learn a new skill. We want whatever we want for them. And we think, I'm going to have a conversation and we're going to fix this. And I think that your idea of allowing people to have their moment of insight and mm-hmm. us being there as parents and not being attached to an outcome or forcing an outcome is also an important parenting lesson. Mm-hmm. And if you want to, share just a little of that story, that may That's help right. parents kind of get to the, well, what are we supposed to do kind of a thing.
No, I would thank you. I would love to share that one. Yeah. So a moment of insight is where you have a pause in your way of thinking or where you finally look at something differently. It's where you finally realize that a certain way of thinking or feeling or behaving isn't working for you. And it's amazing what sometimes causes that moment to happen. Sometimes it's a big moment, a big aha moment, as Oprah would say. Sometimes it's the most subtle things that will make a person stop and realize something in a way that they never have seen it before. So that story that you're referring to was a session I was having with this woman who I'd been seeing for a while, and she had confided in me several sessions prior to the one I described, that she was in an abusive relationship. And so when she came in for this appointment, she was talking about this one of the episodes, the latest episodes of being abused. And she described her husband again, beating her, stepping on her. And then finally she said that he spit on her. And in that second, I did what maybe some of you just did. I physically recoiled when she said that. And the thing that came out my mouth that I hadn't even planned on, but just came out my mouth, I said, gosh, that's such an issue of basic respect. And this really kind person in front of me suddenly stopped, and she looked at me in a way that she seemed, something shifted. And then she got up to leave, and I didn't know what had happened. And so the next day when I talked to her, I said, are you okay? And she said, when you said that, it made me realize this wasn't because I somehow deserved it. It wasn't because I had been abused as a kid. It wasn't because I hadn't done something right that day that my husband was upset with me. It was just about basic human respect. And when she told me that, I was grateful that she'd had that moment. But I'll be honest, of all the things I'd said to her, I couldn't imagine that was the one thing that got her to stop and see it differently. So I think the takeaway for us, whether it's us as parents or as friends, if we go into a discussion with too much idea about what we want the agenda to be because we would like for them to see something we want them to see, you might be keeping them from having a whole nother moment of insight just based on something that you said without even realizing the power of it. So to be able to say, I feel what you feel, sometimes that one statement gave them a moment to see it differently than any other advice you might have given after that. So a moment of insight is so crucial to have to cause change to happen, but you can't make someone have a moment. It's whatever in that second got them to see something differently.
And I love that. And so just kind of going back and getting the high points for us to remind us what we've learned here today. And that is, I'm going to go through like a few of the key parenting tips that we've gotten. One sure. is telling our kids that what they're experiencing is normal. Mm-hmm. And it's really not unique. They're not alone in what they're thinking or feeling. Other people have had these same experiences. And we also want to let them know, hey, you know, if I've ever felt what you felt, how dare I judge you? Mm-hmm. You don't need to, you know, you don't need to think that there's something that's wrong with you or that you're flawed. Other people have felt this. Other people have experienced it. Mm-hmm. If what we want is for our kids to be happy, then going the next layer to get to the foundation of this, digging down, we go, well, we want them to live with purpose. Mm-hmm. And part of living with purpose is understanding and knowing our gifts. It's not something we can figure out for them, but we can have a conversation with them where we just say, hey, I listened to this interview on Mighty Parenting, and I've decided that this is what I'm going to do. And you don't have to ask them to do it or tell them to do it, and you don't need to tell them what you figured out. You can just say, this is what I'm doing. It goes to that idea of modeling. Mm-hmm. And the task there is to identify 5 gifts that you have that are about who you are, not the role you play or what you do. It goes to the core of who you are. Mm-hmm. And then we can focus on using those gifts and encouraging our kids to use their gifts, whatever they believe their gifts to be. And that's also a way of living purposefully and changing our focus and our view of ourself and our story about ourself so that it has a positive framing rather than focusing on those negative things in our life. It's also something that can help us move away from anxiety, which, yeah, Dr. B, anxiety is just everywhere now. Every parent we talk mm-hmm. to, they have a kid, they know a kid. 2 people out of the 4 that live in my household have been treated mm-hmm. for anxiety or are mm-hmm. being treated for anxiety. It's just, it's what's happening. But at the core of that is the anxiety is doubting. And by knowing who I am, that's a constant. So even though what I do can go up and down, who I am isn't.
Perfect.
And as parents, we need to relax. We can talk with our kids, we can share thoughts and ideas, but stop worrying about the outcome. Let go of our guilt. I love this. Guilt is regret for what I did. And shame is regret about who I am. So when we're feeling guilt, we can just say, hey, what do I need to learn from this? Make amends if we need to and say thank you and let it go. And just remember that these moments of insight where we can look at something differently, see something differently, and that's when change happens, often come when we're going through a difficult time. There's so much hope in the work that you do and what you present to us. And these are not rocket science. They're going to be changing habits and we have to focus on them, but it feels like they're very doable. So I want to thank you for sharing that with us. For anyone who wants to get in touch with you, check out your website. Your book, of course, we will have in our show notes, but is also available from your website. Could you share that with us, Dr. B?
Absolutely. So the website is amomentofinsight.com, and the book is also available on Amazon. So it's an Audible version with me narrating the book, and it's on Kindle, paperback, and hardback. So you can go to Amazon as well and look up A Moment of Insight. And then I'm also on Facebook. I have a page there, which is also called conveniently A Moment of Insight. So I'm on Facebook as well. And then on Instagram, it is Dr. B Moment. And I would really love to hear from your listeners as to what are some of their moments. Again, one of the best things that has happened in the course of being able to be a psychiatrist is the exact same environment that you, Sandy, and Judy are creating with this podcast. We're all better parents and we're just better human beings because we're willing to compare notes. We're willing to be vulnerable and say, hey, this is what worked for me. Or even more importantly, this didn't really work for me. Or feeling this way really hurt me. Or feeling this way really helped me. So I appreciate your allowing me to be on your show today so that I can be a part of that discussion. And I hope to have more of those discussions.
Well, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. Remember, if you're here, you are a mighty parent. Don't forget to go to mightyparenting.com to see everything that we have for you there. And as I said, if you're trying to follow the Davis family story or figure out what's going on, go to the website and hit the support page. And there's various info there. And we will keep people updated through our community. Until next week, enjoy your family. And remember, you're a mighty parent.